Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity, who is out this week on the National Review Cruise. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have crazy, crazy, and crazy martinis for our listeners today, just 1 week after the 2016 presidential election. So obviously, everything is going very, very well in our country. Ian, how are you today?
All right. I mean, it's Tuesday. Why not? We probably save all the crazies for Friday, but why not?
That's right. All right. Well, let's start with the first crazy. And yesterday, President Obama held a fairly lengthy press conference in the White House briefing room just before his final overseas trip of his presidency. He talked fairly candidly, I would say, Ian, about what he thinks went wrong for the Democrats this year, ignoring certain segments of the population, doing more to reach out to people that might not be a natural constituency. And of course, he used himself as the perfect example of how that can be successful. Struck me that he probably wasn't all that heartbroken that Hillary Clinton lost, although it's pretty clear he's also not happy that Donald Trump won. But here's the clip that we're going to talk about today. Here's his advice for Donald Trump after a long, nasty, divisive campaign.
And it's really important to try to send some signals of unity and to reach out to minority groups or women or others that were concerned about the tenor of the campaign.
So the point is you need to reach out to those who didn't support you. And on paper, Ian, that makes a lot of sense. We even heard that from Trump on election night. We hear that from politicians all the time. Even if you didn't vote for me, I promise to be your president or your senator or congressman too, and your concerns are my concerns, et cetera, et cetera. The crazy part is that this is coming from President I won, who in 2009, when Republicans were trying to chime in on the stimulus debate or the Obamacare debate, his entire argument was elections have consequences. I won. Stop talking. And then, of course, this is the same president who either was okay with or at least didn't seem all that bothered when it was revealed that conservatives who were trying to get nonprofit tax-exempt status at the IRS were harassed and persecuted and basically denied access to that permission. So it's good advice, just not sure that he's very believable in giving it.
This is the same guy who has lectured America for 8 years to get behind him when it's so clear that he was ramming things they didn't want down their throat. Remember how Obamacare actually got through the Congress, kickbacks to Nebraska and, you know, late night rooms rewriting this nonsense. And then, of course, when all has fallen apart, he's gaslighted the country on what's happening. Yeah, in a vacuum, it's great advice. But again, this is the president who, whenever anyone has dissented from his political agenda for the past 8 years, he's basically said how disappointed he is in the country. You know, it's never that Barack Obama wasn't where the country was at. It was always that, you know, the country was letting down Barack Obama, which obviously gets tiresome after a while. Let's also add that this is the man who's represented a Democratic Party that in the Senate was led by Harry Reid, you know, who famously used the Senate floor so that he could attack Mitt Romney on tax rumors that he didn't have and then justified it by saying, I got away with it. This is the same party where whose nominee was Hillary Clinton this year, who said that her favorite enemy that she had made in her political career was Republicans. I completely agree with the president in a vacuum that Donald Trump needs to do something to calm and assure people who disagreed with him. But this is not the man to give that lesson after, you know, after what we've been through for 8 years. And the election was in part a backlash against that.
At some point, Ian, this would hopefully happen. But of course, everybody's saying, well, the last guy didn't do it, so I don't need to do it. So at what point do we get to the point where you at least engage in a dialogue with the other side, don't necessarily take their ideas since you did win and you have the numbers to do what you want, but at least include them in the process, unlike what Obama did on his signature issues?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, we may sort of see this in a policy way over the next 4 years, assuming, you know, no disasters, because I think that Donald Trump just given where he is on the issues, if you can pin that down, it would be willing to work with Democrats, for instance, on this infrastructure bill that was the first thing out of his mouth on election night. So there might actually be some more policy overlap than we've seen recently. But the question, of course, is sort of rhetorically, is this a president who rhetorically can unite the country? I don't think we've seen that. How do you get that back? Well, you need probably two candidates, or at least two prominent party leaders on both sides who recognize that it's damaging to the country long term to write off the other 50% as nuts or racists or fascists or et cetera, et cetera.
All the labels that unify America after a long and divisive presidential election. All right, on to the second crazy martini now. And Ian, let's go to both CBS News and Hot Air. First, CBS News. The Trump team has asked the White House to explore the possibility of getting his children top secret security clearances. Logistically, the children would need to be designated by the current White House as national security advisors to their father to receive top secret clearances. However, once Mr. Trump becomes president, he would be able to put in the request himself. His children would need to fill out the security questionnaire and go through the requisite background checks. While nepotism rules prevent the president-elect from hiring his kids to work in the White House, they do not need to be government officials to receive top secret security clearances. Now here's Ala Pundit at Hot Air. What makes this doubly weird is that at last check, Team Trump is still insisting that his children will manage his business interests rather than transfer them to a blind trust to avert conflicts of interest. As dubious as it would be for Trump to be setting policy while in daily contact with the people in charge of his extensive international holdings, it's much worse if Ivanka et al. Have security clearances that would give them non-public knowledge that might benefit the business. So when you're talking about trying to get rid of cronyism, even if there's not some sort of behind-the-scenes way to benefit the business as a result of this move, Ian, it just really looks bad. And after demonizing the Clintons and the Obamas for things like this, it's not smart at all.
Yeah, it's what we've just spent the last year, dealing with is Republicans saying that Hillary and Bill Clinton had used their public office to enrich themselves quietly behind the scenes, and that it had potentially adversely affected American policy. And in the first week, the Trump transition team is already looking at basically, if not doing that, at least creating the appearance that they might be doing it. I mean, it's just amazing. People are so unbelievably unself-aware. Obviously, it's foolish, and hopefully more sober heads will prevail. But it shouldn't be particularly surprising in this way. I don't know if Trump is canny enough to be thinking in terms of, maybe we can use this to enrich ourselves. I just don't know if that's in his head. But what is in his head is what has been evident throughout this campaign and what folks who know him and have worked with him have known for a long time, which is that he keeps it in the family. You and I, Greg, have talked a little bit about this. I've said this here. He operates like a mafia boss. Everything is kept within the blood ties. So his closest advisors are his children. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is key in the transition team, evidently, was key in apparently shopping around the idea of a Trump television network, etc. If you are on the outside looking at this, I don't think you can be particularly surprised. He's simply running his transition exactly the way that he ran his campaign and has run his real estate business for years and years.
The Hot Air website now says, update, : Trump official denies. So do you think that this actually never happened, or do you think that they're scrapping the idea now that the media actually has wind of it?
I don't even know if they're scrapping the idea. I think they're denying it because it looks bad. We know that throughout the campaign, among the only people who could really get through to Trump was Ivanka. His maternity leave proposal that came out around the time of the Republican National Convention was entirely Ivanka's doing. It was her proposal. She pitched it to him, and he went along with it. The only other people who seem to have, been able to get through are a couple of those, close coterie folks, Sessions and Steve Miller and Bannon eventually and Kellyanne Conway eventually. It wouldn't surprise me at all if we're seeing the exact same thing happen now. And of course, they don't. Yeah, it makes for bad press, but it would surprise me if they still sort of pursue it behind the scenes.
Last topic on the transition, and obviously we'll have reaction to nominees as they're made, not by the speculation that's coming down the pike on various positions. But one thing seems to be fairly clear here, Ian, and that Chris Christie has fallen deeply out of favor with Team Trump. He lost his title as the head of the transition. Now other Christie allies like Mike Rogers are off the transition. So after all Chris Christie did to ingratiate himself with Donald Trump after dropping out of the race, it appears he's being unceremoniously kicked to the curb here. What do you make of all that?
Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. You know, I mean, it should have been predictable. This is a man, Trump has no particular loyalties, only to, you know, a certain group of people, and there's sort of concentric rings of loyalty around him. It all strikes me as very, you know, Henry VIII. You sort of cross the king and he'll take your head off for it. I don't know if Christie did, but obviously something happened behind the scenes. Apparently Sessions is sort of being squeezed out, if the reporting this morning is accurate. I don't know how much Trump actually sort of rules the roost as much as he's listening to different factions, some more convincing than others, that all have sort of their own agendas. If that's the case, that's very worrying, because it means that there's really no hand on the wheel.
All right, let's move on to our really crazy martini now. If you go to the home of Thomas Jefferson, you can also visit the grave of Thomas Jefferson. And on his tombstone, there are a number of things listed of his accomplishments, none of which, actually, is president of the United States. He wrote the important Religious Freedom Act in Virginia. He wrote the Declaration of Independence, and he's the founder of the University of Virginia. It's that last part of his biography that we would like to refer to now, because on the day after the election, the president of the University of Virginia, Teresa Sullivan, sent out this message. By coincidence, on this exact day, 191 years ago, November 9th, 1825, in the first year of classes at UVA, Thomas Jefferson wrote to a friend that University of Virginia students, quote, are not of ordinary significance only. They are exactly the persons who are to succeed the government of our country and to rule its future enmities, its friendships, and fortunes, unquote. And Sullivan went on to say, I encourage today's UVA students to embrace that responsibility, obviously in response to the election results. Here's the Richmond Dispatch. Amid criticism from professors and students asking that she not use the university's founder as a moral compass, University of Virginia President Teresa Sullivan is defending her use of a Thomas Jefferson quotation. Sullivan says, quote, quoting Jefferson or any historical figure does not imply an endorsement of all the social structures and beliefs of his time, such as slavery and the exclusion of women and people of color from the university, Sullivan said in an online response Monday to a letter signed by 469 faculty members and students. Sullivan acknowledged the university's complicated Jeffersonian legacy and endorsed their right to object to her choice of the quotation she used in her message last week calling for unity and civility after the presidential election. So, Ian, basically we've got people at Thomas Jefferson's university saying that it's wrong to ever quote Thomas Jefferson because apparently he's not politically correct as of 2016, almost 200 years ago.
It's so dumb, Greg. it's such a dumb time to be alive. First, two things. One, my simple take on this is if you don't want to hear about Thomas Jefferson, maybe don't go to the school that he founded. You know, it's like enrolling at Oral Roberts and saying, I really actually hate that guy and I'm going to protest everything about him. Maybe you're at the wrong place. You know, maybe just think about one of the other thousands of institutions that you could potentially attend where you won't have this problem. Because this is not Thomas Jefferson's problem. This is your problem. Secondly, I love the irony in all of this because really the selection from Jefferson's work that Sullivan quoted, you know, that students at Mr. Jefferson's university are not ordinary students. Basically, this whole episode just proves how wrong he was, or at least how wrong he would be. You know, these are absolutely ordinary students, or worse than typical, given the current campus situation, and they're most certainly not fit to be the leaders that Jefferson wanted them to be.
Here's part of the letter that actually got written to the president. This was written by Noel Hurd, not a student, an assistant professor of psychology. So let that sink in for a moment. Quote, though we realize that some members of our university community may be inspired by quotes from Jefferson, we hope to bring to light that many of us are deeply offended by attempts of the administration to guide our moral behavior through their use. The letter noted that Jefferson, quote, was deeply involved in the racist history of this university and cited other memorable Jefferson quotes, such as that blacks are inferior to whites in the endowments of body and mind. Quote, we would like for our administration to understand that although some members of this community may have come to this university because of Thomas Jefferson's legacy, others of us came here in spite of it. For many of us, the inclusion of Jefferson quotations in these emails undermines the message of unity, equality, and civility that you are attempting to convey. Ian, the quote, how could you have a more benign quote if you're going to pick anything from Jefferson than, hey,
yeah, exactly.
Our students are really the most important thing that we do here. How dare you?
Exactly. I wonder if this, this professor obviously has no qualms about, taking an annual salary and a tenure track position, or probably, from Jefferson's University. But it's just sometimes I want our podcast to be just one primal scream. That's how I feel responding to things like this. They don't really even, what do you say? What do you say to people like this? This is just, it's part of an educational failure, a sort of failure of charity of mind that extends from the top of the faculty down to the students that they're supposed to be tutoring. I mean, it's really sad from a certain perspective.
Sad exclamation point, you almost might say. Good news, they've canceled the Play-Doh therapy event at the University of Michigan, so things might be slightly heading in the right direction, but if you're watching...
But there will still be puppies.
There will still be puppies and flowers and pillows, I'm sure. Maybe even crayons, I don't know. Ian, this is a good time to remind folks that while they watch the insanity play out in the streets and on college campuses, I'm an alumnus of Hillsdale College, and you're an alumnus of St. John's College in Annapolis, Maryland. Both campuses, I'm pretty sure, are not hosting such events.
Not that I know of, thankfully.
We can still hold our heads up high about our alma maters. Ian, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Greg. You too.
Ian Tuttle of National Review, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.